First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
You're listening to Karen Cataline as a regular guest host of the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, not exactly Alan Nathan. Karen Cataline filling in for Alan today. It is always a pleasure and an honor to sit in his big chair. And we have a bang-up show for you today. And our next guest is just the start of it. We have an Academy Award-winning actor for his role in Jerry Maguire, with 8 other awards to his name, in his latest film called The Firing Squad, which is what he's here to talk about. He plays a criminal sentenced to death in an Indonesian prison. And it is a pleasure to welcome to the Alan Nathan Show, Cuba Gooding Jr. Hi, Cuba.
Oh,
good to have you.
Well, good to be here. Good to be had. Good to be talked to. I missed
your problem
this time, but I guess I hear I got the next best thing.
You got what? Say that again.
The next best thing.
Oh, well, thank you. That's that's very kind of you. I know that it is a challenge. We're going to talk about it after we talk about this movie. I want to just give you the floor and talk about this movie because it takes courage today to make something in Hollywood that doesn't go with the Hollywood narrative. So tell us about
Absolutely.
This film, The Firing Squad, and why everybody needs to go out and see it.
Well, Tim Che, who is the writer, director, producer, and I had worked together on an earlier film in the early 2000s, a slave tale called Freedom, where it was about these runaway slaves that make it into Nova Scotia. And then with the help of the Lord, they finally find redemption and freedom and whatnot. And Tim and I had a real connection on that movie. And he said, I have something else in the works. And I think that it's a true story, and I would like you to be involved, but it's going to take me some time to get it made. Oh, you fast forward over a dozen years later, and Tim calls me last year and says, I have this script I was telling you about these 3 Americans who meet each other in Indonesian prison, and they get caught up in drugs and whatnot, knowing the rules of the government there in Indonesia. And one thing leads to another, and they're all sentenced to death by firing squad. And I would like you to play one of these roles. And so he sent me the script, and I read it, and it was one of those things that really hit me, because I had just been saying to my representatives, I said, you know, at a time like this, we could really use these stories of hope and faith and courage. And it seems like in society right now, with all the wars going on overseas and all of the things that we're dealing with inside of our country right now, that we could really use, a story of faith. And there was one thing that I was talking to Tim about that I had noticed last summer with this whole Barbenheimer phenomenon, where they had the Barbie movie and the Oppenheimer movie, and they created this thing where they made billions of dollars on these movies that became an event. But what they didn't publicize to the same degree was Sound of Freedom, which was a faith-based movie that made well over $100 million. And I think that that whole ideology, that whole audience that is available, readily available for these movies, these faith-based movies, has been created because Christians go to church every Sunday and they listen to their pastor and they're just into that routine. Even during the pandemic, they go out to the theaters without fear. And I think that audience is very underserved right now. And I think Hollywood now, which is led by the almighty dollar, is starting to take notice that these audiences come out for these movies. And I think this tale is another one like that.
If I may say, you're too polite to say what I was about to say, which is that population of Christians and conservatives have been mocked and derided and hated and in the name of diversity. And I was going to ask you, to be an openly out Christian and conservative in Hollywood, to use their vernacular, you experience a lot of, dare I say, prejudice and even hate, almost a McCarthyism going on in Hollywood. Would you care to speak to that just a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, it's like I've always looked at my career, like I start every day off and I say, thine will be done. I do my little prayer, thine will be done. And God has made me the instrument made me to tell the stories that I make, from Boys in the Hood to Men of Honor to Pearl Harbor to Radio. These are all roles, and also my favorite roles are always ones based on real life people. And there's no denying that I've had encouraging, uplifting roles like Ben Carson and Gifted Hands. And I also played The People versus O.J. Simpson, where I played O.J. Simpson. And that was one of the darkest roles I've ever done. And in Hollywood, they like to categorize you as the bad guy or the good guy. But my instrument, the talents that God has given me to be able to relay truth and emotion in these roles, which brings truth to these roles, be it a dark character or a light character, cannot be denied. And I think the thing with Hollywood is a lot of times they like to put out headlines and, you know, and do these sensational things about my career. But I've been walking with God since I was 9 years old. A lady by the name of Miss McCraven, she brought me to the Lord, brought my mom to the Lord, and my mom is a prayer warrior for our whole family. So she knows when I do these roles that are darker, that it's the instrument that God gives me to portray those characters in those roles. But I get through all of this knowing that I'm doing His will. And it's like I say, God's will be done in my career. And if I go through the highs and lows, which is part of this business, so be it. But I don't live and die by a headline. I don't live and die by a title. Yeah. I definitely don't live or die by an attack. I have to stand on His word, stand on faith, and do my job. And my job is to bring truth to the emotion of each character that I play.
That's so cool. You know, it's certainly not similar. Three men dying for their faith, for the courage that they had. I mean, I recognize they did a crime and they are in a foreign prison to America. But it sounds like, haven't seen the movie, doesn't come out till August. It sounds like that same theme of having courage to stand up for your beliefs. And you in Hollywood, and I don't completely share with your beliefs either, but thank God, to coin a phrase, that you are out there speaking up and showing true diversity. So in a sense, you have the courage also to make movies that you care about, because maybe there are a lot of Hollywood actors who share a lot of your faith, but they don't have the courage to, you know, come out of the closet, shall we say.
Well, absolutely. You know, again, every day of my journey of my career has been a different page. And when I finish and I set my novel down of my life, I know that my kids can stand strong and proud of what their father has created. And I think every role is a palette on a painting that I've created. And I think when you stand back and you look at it, you'll see the picture, and you'll know that I've done God's will, and I've stayed true to my to where I come from and who I am. So that's how I live every day. And Firing Squad, you're right, comes out August 2nd on 2,500 screens, and we've already had a number of screenings where the lights come up and people are weeping and their hands are raised in praise. And it's been really one of those powerful screenings where at the end of it, you understand the message, never give up, because tomorrow gives you a whole nother set of opportunity. And that's we hope that if people, when they see the movie, they can take a little bit of that away into their lives.
Cuba, you've kindly agreed, graciously agreed to do another segment with us. We're almost out of time for this segment. Tell everybody real quick, and then you're going to stay with us, and I'll let you talk more about the movie, entice people to go see it. Where are they going to see it? Where can they go see it in August?
In theaters across America, 2,500 screens, August 2nd.
Ooh, baby.
They'll find it. That I heard. So here we go.
Great. Stay tuned. We're going to have more with Cuba Gooding Jr. right after this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on The Alan Nathan Show.
For anyone looking for a laugh-out-loud action buddy comedy about female samurais in feudal Japan, don't miss The Worst Ronin, a genre-defying new graphic novel for young adults from author Maggie Tokuda Hall and illustrator Faith Schaefer. The Worst Ronin tells the story of 16-year-old Chihiro, a young samurai who spends too much time on her phone obsessing over her idol, Tatsuo Nakano, the first woman to be accepted into the prestigious Keisei Academy Samurai School. Chihiro quickly learns you shouldn't meet your heroes, as the two have little in common and can barely stand each other. But they must learn to put aside their differences and work together to save a village from a terrifying demon. Author Maggie Tokuda Hall.
The Worst Ronin is filled with epic sword fights and scary demons, both literal and metaphorical. I think readers will enjoy the nonstop action and the big laughs, as well as its heart.
The Worst Ronin is now available wherever books are sold.
Sometimes it helps to look at things from a new perspective. That's the message behind a new children's picture book from award-winning author Corey R. Taber. Ursula Upside Down follows a happy catfish named Ursula who swims through a shimmering river with weeds waving above and a sky full of scrumptious bugs below. Then one question turns her world upside down. Which way is up? Children will love turning the book upside down and back again as they follow Ursula's humorous journey of self-discovery. Corey R. Taber, a 3-time recipient of the Geisel Award, an award named for Dr. Seuss recognizing excellence in children's books, told us more.
I think Ursula Upside Down is a fun and funny story that reminds readers there's more than one way to look at the world. I hope kids enjoy flipping the book around to see things from a new perspective, and I hope they'll understand that different people see things in different ways. And there's not always just one right answer.
Ursula Upside Down is now available wherever books are sold.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataleen, filling in for Alan today on the Main Street Radio Network. We're delighted that our current guest, Cuba Gooding Jr., has been available enough to do one more segment with us. He's an Academy Award-winning actor for his role in Jerry Maguire. Listeners will remember him from so many great roles, 8 other awards to his name, and his latest film, The Firing Squad, where he plays a criminal sentenced to death in an Indonesian prison. Cuba Gooding Jr., thanks for staying with us.
Of course. Good to be here.
Well, I want to talk a little more about Hollywood. and surviving it, in a time. Actually, let me shift gears. This is what I really wanted to ask you. As a talk show host, as a fill-in talk show host, people are really hurting and struggling and searching today. And the press, the press articles and things that I've read about what you've said, and the incredible value of faith-based films that Hollywood has not wanted to make because they don't want, well, I'll say they don't want to advance that agenda. They have way too much political hatred for Christians and conservatives, and yet people are flocking to movies like this. I'd love for you to just sort of speak to that, and the when people are in the most pain is when they reach out to God, regardless of your particular denomination or whatever. I happen to be Jewish, and we stand with Christians together for religious pluralism, ma'am, and for America's, you know, our rights to practice our faith as we see fit. So please, if you would, your
thoughts.
Well,
it's funny we're talking about this right now because this weekend I had the, you know, the God-given grace and gratitude to be able to be with our men and women of the armed forces and the military here in Miami.
Wow.
I was in South Beach, and I saw all the B-52 bombers and actually the stealth, the wing plane come over the water and then do all of their different exercises. And I took pictures with all these men and women of our armed forces, and everybody said the same thing. They said, thank you for your characters that are real. And we forget that we have angels among us. We have men and women among us who allow us to be able to, you know, hide behind horrible press articles or hide behind any negativity that you can say. These are your freedom. You can say whatever you want based on these angels that protect our freedoms. Mm. I remember a few weeks ago there was in Iran a rapper that was put to death, or he's sentenced to death because of some lyrics of a song that he wrote. And that broke my heart, and it just it reminded me of our movie Fire Eagle Squad, and that when you go overseas, you don't have these angels that protect you from just the things you say, but you do. It does, like they say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But they do hurt you. They hurt your psyche. They hurt your soul. It says in the Bible, don't let it get into your spirit, and it's true because words can affect your spirit. But they can also affect it in a positive way. And that's why we need these faith-based movies. And that's why Hollywood can say whatever they say about them. But when the movies come out, people come to the theater and they keep coming and they buy tickets for other, you know, members of their congregation so that they can spread the word and receive the healing. It might only be an hour and a half or 2 hours in that theater. But you see someone that looks like you that's going through something you're going through, but in a very heightened way. These men are, you know, they're facing a firing squad, and yet they still can pray, and they still can sing praises, and they still can find their faith because they know it's not the end. And I think as much as Hollywood wants to say any negativity that they can say about it, just remember our military are a shining example of God's will in our lives, that are there to protect us and to help us and to show us the best of us and the best that we can be, and That's the message I got from this weekend that reaffirmed that I know I'm on the right path doing these movies. So
well said. I think it speaks volumes that people are so hungry for movies that make a difference. Like, remember, Michael Landon made them all the time. People wanted heartwarming, meaningful, spiritual movies where good and evil were actually recognized. And the fact that parts of Hollywood, even though they make a lot of money, still refuse to make them. And you have to raise money from the public to publicize your movie speaks volumes about how politically driven and agenda driven Hollywood is today. And we're going to use the last few minutes for everybody so you can tell people how they can contribute to the marketing of this movie to make sure they go to the movie, they tell their friends, and they say, yes, there is a market for these movies, but some people, we have to do it ourselves. So go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So we have you go to firingsquadthemovie.com and you can sign up for a screening that can come to a theater near you. You can participate in the marketing of the movie. You can, a few cast members and I, Kevin Sorbo, are traveling to some of these small towns and appearing in person so that we can show our support and meet different congregations around America and just spread the word on a movie that's powerfully moving people. We've had grassroots screenings already, and this, the reaction's been universally the same of acceptance and renewed hope and faith.
Yeah. And I think that might be the brighter spot with the historic times we're living in, where we're watching many of our freedoms be erased and erode. And some people are actually celebrating the censorship of other voices from the same people who used to fight so hard for free speech. I'm sure you have thoughts about that. Actors used to talk about creative freedom. You know, we just had Richard Dreyfuss, speaking up for creative freedom. Well, you know, these new liberal leftists want to shut it down. So Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes, ma'am. August 2nd.
Tell it, everybody, August 2nd, and they can find. Well, and you're doing your part, making personal appearances. Where are you going to be? Next,
I believe all over. I know. Yeah, I know we're going to Nashville. I believe there's some screenings in Dallas. There's a whole schedule on that website. I don't know the exact.
Excellent.
I know that some have happened, but I know. I believe July 18th, we're in Nashville, Tennessee.
Great.
July 18th.
Great.
But you can confirm it. The firingsquadmovie.com. It'll have all that information.
That's great. And now when people go see it, they'll go, I heard him on the radio. He's really cool. Continued success. Godspeed to you.
You
and I mean
dear.
That sincerely. Thank you for your work and your courage.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful time talking to you.
Me too.
Awesome.
Take care.
Awesome.
Well, you never know who you're going to hear on the Ellen Nathan Show. And we have a whole lot more coming up on the Ellen Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network right after this. Don't go away.
With the spring buying season in full swing, many Americans are contemplating whether now is a good time to buy or sell a home. Higher mortgage rates, limited housing inventory, and competition for the few houses on the market are some of the many reasons that sellers and buyers should work with an agent who is a realtor to find the right home and negotiate the terms of a sale. In fact, according to the National Association of Realtors, while mortgage rates are nearly double those seen during the first 2 years of the pandemic, they are still considered historically low. Nationally, single-family existing home prices climbed 5% over the past year to a median price of $389,400. Also, greater than 90% of the country's metro areas experienced home price growth in the first quarter of 2024, despite facing the highest mortgage rates in nearly two decades. Moreover, home ownership continues to be a catalyst for more Americans to be able to build generational wealth. To learn more about realtors and to find a real estate agent, visit realtor.com.
Professional baseball player J.D. Martinez knows how important it is to help protect his lung health during baseball season and beyond. That's why he's taking steps to understand his risk for pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease.
Because I have asthma, I'm at a higher risk for certain illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia. I don't want anything to get in the way of my baseball season or my life. So I talked to my doctor about ways I can help lower my risk.
People 65 years or older are at higher risk for getting pneumococcal pneumonia, but so are individuals like JD. Anyone who is 19 years or older and living with certain underlying medical conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease may also be at increased risk.
Pneumococcal pneumonia can strike at any time. Vaccination can help protect you, and it's available all year round. So talk to your doctor or pharmacist about it today.
Visit knowpneumonia.com to learn more. That's KNOW pneumonia.com. This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
Malaria continues to be a significant public health issue, especially in Africa. In 2022, the World Health Organization estimated 608,000 malaria-related deaths, with 95% of those being traced back to the African region. Working with the Society of Family Health Rwanda and the Rwanda Ministry of Health, SC Johnson, makers of RAID, are bringing health posts that diagnose, treat, and prevent malaria to the most remote areas of Rwanda. Known as Closer to Care, this initiative has led to 76 health posts in the region and brought health care to over 1 million people. Since their introduction, Rwandans' average walk time to receive care reduced from 3 hours to 30 minutes, and Rwanda has seen mortality rates decrease 89%. For more than 60 years, SC Johnson has been demonstrating its leadership in insect science research, and for the last decade has specifically focused on preventing mosquito-borne disease with prevention tools that maximize social impact and help strengthen communities. Support the fight against malaria by sharing Closer to Care mission and amplifying the importance of healthcare access for those who need it most. Sponsored by SC Johnson, makers of RAID.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy, and I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean, and there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And we move right along on to another topic. And here to introduce it and to talk about it is Stefan Padfield, Free Enterprise Project Associate with the National Center for Public Policy Research. That's called NCPPR for you and me. Prior to this, he was a professor of law at the University of Akron School of Law. Thank you, Stefan, for joining us here on the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So apparently Chevron is risking allegations of what is known as greenwashing by overcommitting to carbon reduction. It seems like lots of companies are doing this now, and you have a lot to say about it. Why don't you help us unpack this, and what does greenwashing even mean?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Just to give your listeners a bit of background, so I work for the Free Enterprise Project. It's part of the National Center for Public Policy Research. And one of the things that we do is we act as shareholders. So we own shares in a lot of the major corporations, and we file shareholder proposals of various sorts trying to get these companies out of their politicized, typically left-leaning, left-wing radicalism and back to business, right, back to neutral. And so we've got a number of different proposals this year during shareholder season, but one of them that we have at Chevron and a few other companies is getting specifically at this issue of greenwashing and these greenhouse gas emission commitments, right? And so what we mean by greenwashing is essentially washing your corporation with green to make everybody think that you're doing all the right things according to climate change activists, when in reality, it's just a superficial coat of paint, right? And the specific problem that we're identifying with Chevron is it has made a number of voluntary greenhouse gas reduction commitments that it doesn't have to make, but it has, and that raises a number of problematic issues from the standpoint of shareholders and I think society more broadly. One is, if you don't have to make those commitments, why are you making them when that actually gets the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, to require more, right? So the SEC has recently passed a climate disclosure rule. It's currently being fought in the courts. We're one of the plaintiffs doing that. But it backed away from what are called Scope 3 emissions disclosures, which are basically greenhouse gas emission disclosures related to folks that you're doing business with, right? It's not your own emissions, but it's, you know, ones that you can be tied to through your suppliers, for example. And they did away with that. They backed away from that after a bunch of pressure. But companies like Chevron continue to make those disclosures voluntarily. The problem is once you make them, then the SEC can require additional disclosures. And once you make those additional disclosures and you put them together with the original disclosures, now you can get sued for fraudulent, misleading disclosures. And the SEC can come after you, again, for this greenwashing, which is something that is a new focus for them and can cost tens of millions of dollars. And when you wrap all that up, it's particularly problematic because a lot of the underlying assumptions that support these reductions have been really challenged recently. And it's just a sort of a big ball of wax that's problematic that we're asking them to take a look at in terms of you know, whether they really have been fully informed in making these decisions.
Yeah. Stefan, because this topic is so complicated for a lot of people, I mean, God knows, public school education wasn't that good on science and math anyway, a lot of it. And so people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about climate change, kind of like COVID, COVID. And what I'd like to focus on, because you're intimately, I think you're aware of what's going on, is how an ideology finds its way from here's what we think to a forced, dare I say, Marxist agenda with plans and ideas that nobody even knows about. Like, for example, forcing electric cars on everybody, and they're too expensive and they explode in water, but we're going to force it anyway because eventually people won't be able to afford cars. So it's clear to a lot of people that it's agenda-driven. But I would like you to speak to, if you could, from a broader standpoint, the mechanism that gets a company as huge as Chevron and others to voluntarily do something that enables the government to put their thumb down on everyone more. Is money changing hands? Where's the carrot and the stick here? Because I don't think they just did it voluntarily. I think people are pushing them shall we say, pressuring them to do that, maybe with some, you know, bennies involved. What say you about that assertion?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to unpack there, and it's an incredibly important question. And I typically come at it with, it's not just one answer or one type of person, right? I think at the very least, we need to break the players down into the true believers, the opportunists, the useful idiots, and the cowards. And it takes really all of them to get us to the place where we are now in terms of a lot of the radical leftism that we see in corporate America, right? And so, and then even in those categories, you can break it down further. So if you talk about the true believers, you've got the true believers in climate change, and if we don't get rid of all oil and gas in the next 3 years, we're all going to be dead, right? The real radicals. And there, it's fascinating when you sort of break down the number of steps between the assertion that there is some rising temperature to therefore we need to get rid of all oil and gas. There's about five steps in between there. And when they claim they've got the consensus in science, they typically mean just the very first proposition and not the sort of subsequent, you know, five or six propositions that then end with, and therefore we need to end all oil and gas, right? So there's sort of the radical true believers in the climate change hysteria and agenda. But then you've got the even more radical true believers, and hear that line that you often hear about, it's never the issue, it's always the revolution, right? They see climate change activism as just another way to destabilize the society and create the chaos so they can march in their top-down, centralized, you know, utopian sort of globalized government, right? And so you've got both sets of true believers, and some of them are outside the institution, and unfortunately some of them are inside the institution. You've got the opportunists, right? The opportunists are just responding to incentives, and we have so many subsidies being pushed by government that they're just responding to those incentives and push them in the direction they want to go.
We saw this with COVID. They got Walmart, which they used to hate, to put footprints on the floor to tell you where to walk. Okay? People didn't do it. They finally erased it. But it was the revolution because it was conformity. It was do as I say. It's no longer a free country. We'll tell you what you can do, where you can go. Mobility, freedom, that's what seems to be on the chopping block. I got to ask you, Justin, we only have a couple minutes, but I wish we had longer, to talk about what are the arguments that the layman person most responds to when you get into this to avoid the eyes glazing over? What is the thing that, you know, is most persuasive that you've found?
I think one is just looking at the impact to your day-to-day life and your pocket, right? So the gas prices, certainly there's a line between all the climate activism and the food prices, right? So the fact that these agendas have real-world consequences for the day-to-day mainstream American in their shopping, in their work, in inflation, right? So that's point one. And then point two is to make clear that this supposed scientific consensus is not a scientific consensus, right?
Not at all.
It's much more complicated. There's sort of a consensus on item one, but in order to get to the point where these radical, you know, climate activists are trying to get us, you've got to add about five more steps, and the consensus falls apart more and more. So one of the things we have in our proposal is we point out to this report signed by, you know, 1,900 experts that many of which are, or some of which at least, are Nobel laureates, right? So these are legitimate people who have something important to say, and they critique a number of the underlying assumptions, right? And certainly the other thing I think you can point out to the people that have been around for a bit is, hey, look back through your life. How many of these hysterical climate predictions have come true, right? There was just one that was going around the internet, right, where Al Gore was saying by 2014 all the ice caps would be melted. I mean, every year, right?
Among the most persuasive. Now we know that people are not reproducing, and there's a crisis in population. And we also remember that there was hysteria about overpopulation. Now all of a sudden, although it's gotten out slowly, we find out it's the opposite. Those things weren't true. And anyway, boy, yeah, that the music, you hear that. How can people find you and follow you, Stephen Padfield?
Sure. Best thing is just to go to nationalcenter.org, and you can also find me on X at Stephen Padfield.
Stephen Padfield. Yes, we are connected there. Thank you so much for joining us and tackling always some challenging subjects here. We appreciate your time. Well, we're going to wrap up this hour talking a little bit about Bidenomics. Oh, you won't want to miss that. Stay tuned.
A new proposal by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs lowers the standard of anesthesia care for veterans and endangers their lives. Dr. Ronald Harder, president of the American Society of Anesthesiologists, has more.
This risky proposal would replace anesthesiologists, who are highly trained physicians, with nurse anesthetists in surgery. There is no rationale for this initiative. VA's own data shows there are no anesthesiology workforce or access issues, and independent research clearly shows that anesthesia is safest when an anesthesiologist is involved.
A survey by the American Legion found that 91% of veterans expect the same quality of care available in the nation's top-rated non-VA hospitals. Here's anesthesiologist and combat veteran Dr. Bridget Bush.
The current team-based model of anesthesia care, having an anesthesiologist and nurse anesthetist work together, is a proven established model of care. We urge the public to contact their policymakers to tell VA to stop this proposal and protect safe VA care.
Learn more at safevacare.org.
Young readers who are fans of scary stories have something new for their summer reading list. Authors Justina Ireland and Hannah Olkoff introduced the new book series Tales from Cabin 23. The series begins with Tales from Cabin 23, The Boo Hag Flex, about a young girl whose estranged father moves her to a trailer park in rural Georgia after her mother dies. Justina Ireland.
Each installment is a standalone story with a spooky theme that ties them together. If you love creepy stories with twists and turns, I think you're going to love the Cabin 23 books.
The second book, Tales from Cabin 23, Night of the Living Head, from Hannah Olkoff, arrives 3 months later in August. Hannah Olkoff.
Justina and I wanted to create a Goosebumps for the new generation. Scary stories with lots of chills and thrills and maybe even some laughs along the way.
Tales from Cabin 23, The Boo Hag Flex is now available, and Tales from Cabin 23, Night of the Living Head, arrives in August.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? Or a 14-year-old girl who signs up to every after-school activity not to make friends, but just to get something to eat? Or a retiree who fell ill and had to choose
between getting medicine or groceries.
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
pva.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm sure it hasn't escaped you. Oh, my. That we are in an election year. So much is going on. I don't have time to wax philosophic about Richard Dreyfuss and Robert De Niro and everybody politicking, some being shut down, some being propped up. You know how it goes. Here to talk about what's going on in Pennsylvania is Emily Green. She is with Americans for Prosperity's Pennsylvania office. She has nearly a decade of political experience, has been with AFP since 2008. Welcome, Emily Green, to the Alan Nathan Show. We appreciate you.
Hey, Karen. It's so great to be here. Looking forward to chatting.
Yes, yes. So you're in Pennsylvania, and President Biden sometimes claims Pennsylvania Scranton as his home. Then he claims Delaware as his home. But he has been campaigning there and has opened 24 offices in the state. And he keeps coming. And you've got some thoughts about that. Why don't you tell us?
Oh, Karen, have you seen the movie Groundhog's Day? That's how it feels every day here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You know, today marks his, I believe, fifth time in Philadelphia alone this calendar year. We're looking at upwards of 30 visits since he took office in 2021, where he's been in Pennsylvania. So we are no stranger to Biden and friends parachuting into the Commonwealth and trying to sell us on a bad bill of goods, which is his economic plan.
Well, and I see here that you're trying to get the word out that things like $3,115 more on food people are spending, I guess that's for a family of four, since January of 2021. The economic numbers, I guess he's trying to sweep that under the carpet that he trips over, or what?
Well, I will tell you, we have heard every single excuse from this administration. And also, you know, our Senate Democrats that represent us here in Pennsylvania, that, you know, they have so many excuses for why we're seeing more or higher prices at the pumps, at the grocery stores. And quite frankly, this is really just because they keep spending more money. I know that I have to balance my budget. I'm sure you do as well. Washington feels that the rules don't apply to them. And unfortunately, every single Pennsylvanian and quite frankly, every single American is feeling the impact of that.
Yes. And here's the thing. There are some things like, you know, my previous guest that make people's eyes glaze over, like climate change and very, very technical things about why this is, you know, being another wool being pulled over our eyes. You have to drive an electric car. Oh, wait, you can't afford an electric car. You're going to have to take a bus. No, you're going to have to ride a bicycle. No, you're going to have to look to the government to tell you whether you can leave your home. We know how that goes. But boy, when you mess with people's pocketbooks, and women in particular who have to put food on the table, they buy groceries. We've got everything outrageously more expensive. Tell me what the worst excuse that Joe Biden makes for this and says this is, I mean, does he even mention the cost of living has gone through the roof? Inflation is out of control.
Well, you know, to speak on his energy policy, you know, his excuses are bad, but Karen, I would say his actions are way worse. So here in Pennsylvania, particularly, you know, where I live in the Philadelphia metropolitan area, Memorial Day weekend, people flock to the shore. So as they're pumping their gas, they're feeling not only a massive increase in their gas prices, but we also have one of the highest gas taxes in the nation, which is just insult to injury, essentially.
Wow.
You know, last week, what we wanted to do at Americans for Prosperity across all 37 of our state chapters is host a number of gas station giveaway events under our campaign Prosperity is Possible. So we have the opportunity to talk with folks at the pumps, meet them right where they're at. For 2 hours, we dropped that price down to $2.38, which was the national average before Biden took office. Now we're looking at about $4 a gallon here in PA. It's you know, incredibly high. But yeah, we had that time to talk with them about how Washington got us to this point and how there are solutions that Congress could take tomorrow if they wanted to. So yeah, in response to another uptick in gas prices, and I will tell you what I suspect is it was in response to our Prosperity as Possible campaign, this administration pulled from the strategic reserves again. So this creates a very temporary increase in supply, which, again, temporarily decreases the cost at the pump. But this is such a small, tiny Band-Aid on a large, gaping wound that is his current energy policy. And quite frankly, we know we have to do better, and people at the pumps know that as well.
Emily, we have only a couple of minutes before we got to wrap it up for this hour. And I am sorry we don't have more time, but I really wanted to give you time to talk about what you're here to talk about. I have a concern. I wish, you know, I don't know if you're the right person to talk to, but Americans for Prosperity and the remaining Koch brother seems to be engaged in local races to support people who hate Donald Trump. I know that the remaining Koch brother, forget which one his name is, doesn't like Donald Trump. And there's a lot of sabotage going on locally across the nation, in which candidates who are supported by Trump are getting trounced with money and whatever. You may not know about that, but do you have a comment on that? Because I think it's so divisive and so wrong, given that we're looking at communism nationwide with the current administration. What do you say?
You know, I will say that what I'm hearing in Pennsylvania is, you know, people are looking for a change. Now, we have Americans for Prosperity, and Americans for Prosperity Action have supported candidates that have, you know, made the pledge that they're going to remove governmental barriers to opportunity. And certainly that's what Pennsylvanians, and I know for certain most Americans want. They just want government out of the way. And when it comes down to it, it's really not even about the partisanship. They just really want to have the opportunity to reignite the American dream again. And unfortunately, this current administration is the biggest threat to reigniting the American dream.
And we know that the Republican candidate is really the remaining person who can oust Biden, you know, everything else notwithstanding. I just wish, you know, they're open borders. And I hope that maybe off air, whatever, you give me someone who can talk about why it's okay to have open borders, but still be for economic prosperity and not to support the Republican candidate in a situation as serious as this. Tell everybody how they can find you, follow you real quick. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. If you'd like to learn more about Americans for Prosperity, head to ASPHQ.org.
Okay. Emily Green right there. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we have another hour of great guests here on the Alan Nathan Show. Don't go away. And you're listening to the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.